So with that, I have three men who've bravely tried to stand up in their communities on behalf of their daughters and other women that they see competing and loving sports. And so we're going to hear some different stories. I'm going to introduce each of them individually and have them share their stories, and then hopefully we'll get into a bit of a discussion. So Montgomery, we didn't get to hear from you before the session. We were doing little introductions before this went live. So I'm actually going to start with you. Do you mind telling us where you're from? Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then give us your story and why you're doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you so much. It's such an honor and a privilege to be part of this. I've been following ICONS since the beginning. Been following Riley Gaines since her beginning, and it's a passion of mine. So I'm a retired educator, health, physical education, recreation, and dance major, BSED from the University of Alabama, a Master of Arts in Curriculum and Teaching from Teachers College, Columbia University. I taught for 8.5 years in New York City public high schools, where I was a coach of basketball, baseball, girls cross country, and whatever stuck to the wall and I was able to do. Became a director of athletics, health, physical education, health services, and security out on Long Island around the year 2000. Retired 2.5 years ago. So I have experience in managing health services for schools, athletic administration. I also have a 22-year career in the United States Army. I was a combat medic for 5 years and then a health services officer where I coordinated health services in combat zones and in hospitals. So I have an extensive background in that. But my pride and joy, my most important job is father and husband, husband first. I have 5 children, ages 28 to 15. My poor daughter, who's 15, has 4 older brothers. And she competes against them. In fact, she is going to be in the New Balance Nationals at Franklin Field at UPenn on Father's Day. And she qualified for the 800 leg of the medley relay. And she's so excited about that. She's just a sophomore in high school. But she got interested in running because she loved to compete against and beat her brothers. I'm a scout leader, and one of my merit badge counseling is the physical fitness merit badge, where the scouts have to do a mile run. And as soon as she could walk, she came out. And before you knew it, she was beating the boys. So I guess the last thing I wanted to say was, I've thought about this so much. I read the articles, I watch the videos of the gender dysphoric boys and men. And I often ask myself, what would I do? What am I gonna do on Father's Day if someone lines up against my daughter? And the only vision that comes to mind is just walking down on the track and standing in front of them. I have no idea what I would really do, but I know it would be very upsetting to me.
Wow. Have you, so what have you done? Have you spoken to your leaders, or have you spoken to school districts or coaches? Like, what have you done to date?
It's interesting because when I was an active athletic director, we had a couple of situations. One at the school where I was the athletic director, where a female athlete wanted to join the wrestling team. And in New York State, there's a process you go through for allowing that to happen. We allowed it to happen and didn't go well because none of the opponents would wrestle her. And it turned out in the end, her boyfriend was on the wrestling team, which she hid from us. And then a little bit later, at a school district I wasn't directing against, but my district was an opponent. They had a boy who was selectively classified to play on the girls' field hockey team. And that was a big issue. I had an article published in Long Island Newsday citing that his participation took away an opportunity for a girl. And no one was considering the feelings of all the other players, especially on his team. The boy had immigrated from Europe, where boys do play field hockey, and he was selectively classified to play on the girls' team. My coach, behind the scenes, was upset about it, my female field hockey coach, but she wasn't willing to make a public statement against it because her friend was the opposing coach. I've been involved in lots of Title IX disputes over the years, starting in the late 90s, but I don't think there's much relevance now, except for the fact that Title IX has been completely usurped with the president's changing of it. I have no idea how he can do that, change the law. I thought the legislature had to do that, but maybe we can talk more about that.
So I assume this is through club running, correct? Or is this high school?
This is high school.
High school running, that's right. Oh, okay.
We haven't had to have the discussion because, as far as I know, in my section, in public high school athletics in New York State, we're divided into 11 sections, and Eastern or Suffolk County, Long Island, is sectional 11. We have had no incidents that I know of gender dysphoric males participating on female teams. But the governor, I believe, has allowed it in other places.
Yes. And there is a high likelihood that there will be a male competing at the New Balance Nationals.
Will you be there?
I just
asking.
We should be there.
Okay. I'll look for you.
I don't know that we will. We will get people there. I don't know if I will personally be there, but we should talk about that after.
Okay.
I know that there's interest in getting a group of people present to just say that this is an event that needs to be celebrating the accomplishments of, you know, female athletes certainly at this level. And sure. I can really commiserate with you on not knowing what you're going to do. I still remember pulling into the parking garage, getting ready to walk into the swim meet where I was going to have to watch my daughter stand on a block next to Leah Thomas. It was really hard.
What did you want to do?
Gosh.
Come on. Catharsis. What would you want to do?
Honestly, I hope that the coaches would put a stop to it, but I knew that wasn't going to happen at that point. Yeah.
The adults in the room.
I hoped. I mean, I had watched her for the days preceding the competition. I had watched her really wrestle with how to handle the whole situation because she knew it wasn't fair. She knew she was going to have to go through with it. She didn't think anyone would have her back. And, you know, for decades, she'd worked so hard to swim at this level, and to know that you're ahead of a race that no one thinks your competition is important enough to you to make sure it's fair. And there are people that you chose, you know, to swim for, you trusted in. It just feels like such a betrayal. But I, as parents, I mean, I walked in with my husband, there were tons of parents there, and all of us were just kind of mouth agape. No one knew what to do. I think now that there's been, you know, 2 years have passed, you would think we would have some better options, right? We're fighting in, like you're talking about, trying to figure out what are the paths forward? How do we change things? But it's just super important to have men like you. Like, I think hearing it, do you talk to your daughter? Like, how does she feel? Do you make sure that she knows that you?
It hasn't come up.
It hasn't come up.
I'm waiting. Nobody's talked about it. The parents haven't talked about it. The student athletes haven't talked about it. The athletic director hasn't, the coaches have, nobody's talked about it, because as far as we know, there is not one in Suffolk County.
But this is New Balance Nationals.
Where... It's New Balance Nationals. And we have two student athletes going up to New York State, the states, in 3000 meter, in pentathlon. So I guess there's a chance at the state championships.
I think, yeah. I mean, I think we're waiting for the list. I'll have to check in with the person that's following track really carefully, but I think that we are expecting some. I just don't know in what races. So, wow. Okay, so you haven't done anything. Russell has. I'm going to move on to let Russell tell his story. So, and this is interesting. We've got two dads. So Russell's daughter is also in track and has faced this. So maybe you can learn a little bit from his experience and what he knew and what he found out. So I'm going to take the spotlight off you. Thank you for sharing, Montgomery. We will bring you back in if I can figure out how to remove the spotlight. Here we go. Okay, Russell, I'm going to put the spotlight on you. Do you mind sharing your story with us?
Yeah, I guess, yes, different story. I'm like the opposite end of the spectrum here from Montgomery. He's got the great resume and stuff. I'm just a dad. I don't have a great background or history or education or anything like that. But I have a 15-year-old daughter now. We live just outside Seattle. And she's a freshman in high school now. But now she, for the last 2 years, she's been running against boys that say they're girls. And one of them is in her league. So a majority of her races, there's a boy there saying he's a girl. She also does cross country and same issue, same boy. There's another boy in another town who's in a race also. And it started off kind of in this weird, you know, we didn't know anything about it. There's rumors of this happening. And suddenly she shows up to her first cross country race in high school. And she says, "Dad, there's a boy in it," you know, and I wasn't there at the race or anything. And no one wants to talk about it. The school tells you not to share pictures of it. And so it became an issue right away, and talking to her about it and how she felt about it. And I realized now, again, it's been a 2-year battle for me on this. The most important thing is to talk about it. Like this little conversation we're having tonight, but then at the track meets, at the cross country meets, is talk to other people about it, share what's going on about it, and talk to your daughters about it, because all the men that aren't doing anything are completely failing their daughters. They need to understand that this is not okay. That is a boy pretending to be a girl for whatever reason. And that they don't have to pretend. You know, everyone else is forcing them to pretend, but you need to let your kids know that it's not okay and that you're not going to pretend. And everyone else is going to force you to, but you don't have to. And that gives them a lot of power, because when they're forced to be silent, when they're forced to pretend, when they're forced to give up their places, you're really taking a lot from them. And ever since my daughter was little, you know, I read stories about like the big bad wolf and stuff. And deception is a predatory act. And when you tell girls to ignore open deception and just accept it and go along with it and take a back seat to it and give up their rights for it, I think you're doing a really dangerous thing to girls. And you're not preparing them to defend themselves, to be careful, and to have their kind of, you know, antennas up for trouble. And so the conversations that you have to have with them and being honest with them are super important. And so at these track meets, at first, what we saw is just this total silence. One of the first meets, there's another boy who said it was a girl. And no one realized it at the time. The race happened, and there's this really tall person with an Adam's apple running with the girls. And everyone's going, I think that's a guy. And, you know, no one wants to say to a girl, "You look like a guy." But it was clear when he got up on the podium, this was a boy, a young man, and pretending to be a girl. And it cast a whole pall over the whole experience. The girls all of a sudden were awkward and weird, which is not normal for girls. They're very friendly and get along and support each other. And no one knew what to do. And it really ruins the experience for them. So, but no one was willing to speak up until we kind of found out later and confirmed all this stuff. But now what I've seen how this has evolved over a couple of years, now people are speaking up more. I'm speaking up more. I've been threatened by the police at cross-country meets. I have administrators that will follow me around to make sure I don't say anything. I've been threatened that if I say something to one of these boys who says he's a girl, that they're going to remove me, they're going to arrest me. You know, like Montgomery said, he wants to go out there and get in their way. Boy, I totally feel you on that. I want to go out and stop him from doing this to the girls, but you will be arrested in Seattle. You will be arrested, and I don't think they'll ever let you out. You'll be attacking a minor. It'd be this horrible thing. And you know, they also threaten your kid. I mean, I'm willing to take some things, but they kind of hold our kids hostage. And so they'll say, you know, your daughter's not allowed to compete anymore then. At all these state track meets here in Washington, they'll start this anti-bully comment. And I know I'm rambling. I'm sorry, Kim, but you know, there's comments, you know, you can't bully, you can't say anything to kids. And what's clear is if you boo a boy being a girl or something like that, or, you know, it will be dealt with, and your kid will potentially be disqualified and removed and not allowed to compete. And you'll also probably be arrested or threatened with arrest or removed from the stadium or whatever. And so it's a very kind of Orwellian feeling you get when you go to these track meets and stuff, and they're threatening you, and it's all just for this one or two, in some cases, boys that they can't, you know, this fantasy they're living can't be disturbed, and that's not right. And so for all the dads and the moms out there, just start speaking up is the best I encourage you to do. That's actually how I've seen winning in the last 2 years. Now when this boy shows up to track meets, people aren't afraid. Like, you know, I'll wear a shirt that says Save Women's Sports and stuff, where a year ago I was threatened wearing that. And every time you speak up, it's amazing how many people come up and say, thank you, we appreciate this. And at one of the last track meets, they're at the starting line. My daughter's at the starting line. There's this boy in the group there. And the girls are friendly. And one girl yells out, good luck, ladies. Let's have a good race. And my daughter says, good luck, ladies and gentlemen, and looked at him. And after the race, like half the girls came up and said, thank you for saying that. I mean, it's so important for our girls to see that, hey, you know, the charade's going to go on. Some states are going to enable it and they're going to defend it. But it's so important that you can say to your girls, this is the truth. Hey, that's a boy pretending to be a girl. The state's going to let him go out there and run. We're going to do this whole thing. But, you know, we're not going to go along with it. We're not going to, you know, it's important that you validate the truth with your kids and make sure that they're safe and that they recognize the truth and are not punished for it. So the biggest lesson I've learned over the last couple of years is speak up. You'll be viewed as rude and impolite and whatnot. And it's a little bit difficult, but there's a lot of people that support you that are just afraid. And so if you can be one of the first people at the track meet, at the thing, to stand up and talk, like, you're not screaming and yelling at the kid, but at the rate you said, that's a boy pretending to be a girl out there, and talk to other people about that openly. And you know, not with this hushed tones and not ashamedly, other people can join you and stand up. So that's an important thing to do, because most people don't think this is right. They're just afraid. And no one wants to be viewed as heckling a child or anything like that. But we need to stand up for the truth to protect our daughters.
I agree that with something you've said and that we heard from Montgomery, I would encourage you also to speak to your daughter. This is not a conversation we can shy away from in our own homes specifically. And our girls have to know that it's an instinct that's been built in us for over all of human history. It's an instinct for self-protection and self-awareness to recognize when a man is in our space, when a man is, I mean, our antennas go up. We have to be able to acknowledge that. And our girls cannot be taught that instinct is wrong or bullying to have those thoughts. That's what came out of the Ivy League when they were telling the girls, you need to go to counseling so that you can get yourself okay with undressing in front of this person, this man. Women have to be able to call a man, and that cannot be seen as wrong or hurtful or hateful. And it's something young girls are really wrestling with right now, because they're being told that to recognize a boy or a man as a boy or a man is bigoted. And that's gaslighting. It's gaslighting to our instincts and it's gaslighting to us being able to speak truth. So I really appreciate that you took that on so boldly, Russell. What have your interactions been like with other men in your community, in your school? Do you feel like you're getting through to people, or that the men respect the position you're taking, even if they're too scared to do it right now? What's the feedback from other men in your environment?
It's generally positive. Most men are just afraid because of work. I mean, even within homes, I mean, some marriages are split on the issue, right? And no one wants to be perceived as being mean. And a lot of our daughters also will say, you know, Dad, don't embarrass me, Dad. You know, there's that issue too. But when men have recognized that they can stand up and it's the right thing to do, and it makes their girls more powerful and more safe and more comfortable and happier, that then they stand up. And so there's strength in numbers. And so it's important to talk and have these conversations, and don't shy away from it. I mean, you will have unpleasant conversations, I guarantee you, but you're going to have a lot of great conversations too. And it's amazing how often the girls will come and thank you later. And like, you know, my daughter's been thanked many times, and thank you for doing this. Thank you for doing this. And I don't think my daughter's had really much negative pushback at all. And she's been called like a transphobe by a few people. But she recognizes that's not the case at all. But so it's good feedback. It's just, you got to stand up, and being one of the first to stand up is difficult, but people will join in. And so it's important that we all just don't bow the knee to this and go along with what they want. We need to stand up and do what's right for our kids.
Did you ever watch Susan Vierling's talk from our summit? Is that posted? Yeah, Susan.
No, I saw Dina McMillan's, and hers was super moving. Dr. Dina, I mean, if you haven't seen that, everybody watch that doctor at the ICONS conference. She was incredible. And once you see and hear her, you can't unsee and hear her. And her whole point is that this is a predatory behavior. This is disarming girls and their ability to recognize trouble. This is setting them up for abuse in the future, because they're learning just to take it and to not do what's right and defend themselves and stand up for what's true. And it's, you know, effectively setting them up to be gaslit. I mean, if you can have your daughter go along pretending a boy is a girl, you know, what else you can make them do? And for my daughter running with these boys, my daughter, she beat the boys and she did not lose to them. So it's kind of that she felt good speaking out about it, because she didn't lose to them. Like, she wasn't complaining, but she actually would beat them. But she, like, so in the cross country, they'd be in a pack, and she'd be in a pack with this boy for, you know, 2 miles sometimes. And she always goes, "He doesn't act like a girl, Dad. I mean, he trash talks. He, you know, he acts differently. He behaves differently." And she also said a really interesting thing. You know, I'm not a girl, so it's hard for me to think like one. But she said, you know, if a girl really was in the wrong body and she was in a boy's body, the last thing she would do is use that boy's body against other girls. She goes, that's the most ungirl thing to do. And when she explained it better than I am, but when she explained that to me, it really did hit me. It's like, you're right. Yeah, I mean, girls would not do this to other girls. This just would never happen. And so just making himself the prima donna, and everyone has to bow to him and do what he wants and make him feel comfortable, and, you know, who cares what everybody else feels, is just so selfish and so wrong. And that's the other thing that really got to me about this. I do one more thing. This one guy was talking to me, and he said that an interesting thing. He goes, "I'd kind of respect this boy if, you know, he strapped on some extra weight to his chest and his hips, and he didn't get a lot of good sleep. And, but then also at the finish line, he just ducked out because he didn't want to, you know, mess up the awards of the girls or something to, you know, he just wanted the experience of pretending to be a girl. And, but then he didn't want to take from the girls in the process." And I was like, "You're right. Why does he have to win? Why does he have to beat another girl out and take her place on the team or on the podium?" It really is an extremely selfish act, and making our girls stand up for that is not unselfish of them. It's the right thing to do. You know, so we can't just teach our girls that anytime a boy wants something that they have, just give it up for them. That's a bad message for girls.
I think, so I have so many thoughts running through my head right now. First, I want to thank Allison for putting Susan Vierling's talk in the chat. Everyone should go check that out. All of you gentlemen, I'm just going to try to summarize it very quickly. She talked about how healthy civilizations have strong women, have men championing women. And that's who the men of a strong civilization, that's why they go to war. It's what they're defending. They're defending women and children. They're defending their families. And that civilizations, when a civilization has been conquered, the first thing that a civilization that is taken advantage of, that is taken as the prize, are the women of the civilization. They're taken captive, they're raped, they're taken as wives, they're taken and whatever. And so a fallen civilization is a civilization where the men no longer they've given up, they've handed over the bounty, and the bounty is the women. So when we see the Progress Pride flag planted upon the bodies of women, and the men are just saying, it's okay, like, I'm not going to fight this, then they're conquered men. And it was a shocking, like, she's just a dynamic speaker, and she's thought about this for so long, much longer than I've even been in the fight. And to hear this, you know, this powerful woman get up there and talk about, like, civilizations and history, and she's talking about how the champions of a cultured, civil, you know, successful civilization are uplifting the women. And, you know, it was so amazing. You have to listen to it. So
I will.
It's really pertinent to our discussions tonight, because it's talking about, you know, men saying, no, you're not going to do this to my daughters and the women. You're not going to tell me that a man can take their place or kick them out of their space or take away their privacy and dignity. I'm not going to stand for it. And that's what you three are here tonight embodying, is saying, yeah, you know what? Our eyes are opening, and we're ready to take on the heat, and we're man enough to do it. So appreciate you all speaking out. I want to get to Bruce's story, and then I want to talk to all three of you about, like, how we could talk, planning how men could step up and encouraging them in the future. So thank you, Russell. And Bruce, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm all set.
So this is Bruce Guthrie. Oh, I forgot to mention. So Montgomery is in New York, and then Russell and Bruce are both in Washington in the Seattle area. So Bruce comes to us with both in the same area, different sport now. We're in swimming. So Bruce is going to share his story. Thank you.
My name is Bruce Guthrie. I'm a father of three. I've got two boys and a 12-year-old girl. I am a level 2 certified speed skating coach, the founder of the Whatcom Speed Skating Club. And as of this year, I'm the 2024 U.S. long track speed skating champion in the 60 to 64 age class.
Congratulations.
That and $15 will buy you a latte. I've been a coach for many years, coached girls and boys, women and men. And I'm a certified ski instructor, level 2 ski instructor. My daughter and one of my sons compete every summer in the Greater Seattle Summer Swim League. And we belong to this sweet little swim and tennis club. It's not some big hoity-toity club with a restaurant and a golf club. It's just three tennis courts and one swim pool and a place to change. Very inexpensive, and it's a sweet little community. And we heard kind of at the last minute that our club was considering voting on a proposal within the Greater Seattle Summer Swimming League to allow trans people to compete in the category that they wanted to. And I thought, hey, that's not fair. And it seemed like no one else was standing up and saying, hey, that's not fair. And so I went to a couple of the board meetings and I said, hey, that's not fair. And there was a lot of heated discussion. This was the most contentious issue I'd heard about in this sweet little swim and tennis club. And the way it was going was the board was going to vote yes. And so there was the meeting of the Greater Seattle Swimming League, Summer Swimming League, and there were 15 clubs, and there was discussion, and 10 clubs voted to adopt the new gender policy, and five clubs voted no. And so, you know, here I am, like Russell, I live in the Greater Seattle area, and it's left-wing, woke, central. You know, I stood up and spoke. Most of the other people were too afraid to stand up and speak and say, look, this is just not fair. In this community of Seattle, expressing that view is going to get you labeled a bigot, a transphobe, a Nazi.
Thank you something for doing that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, thank you for doing that, for having the courage to, like, instinctively to do that.
I think I was born without the ability to care what other people think about me, and that kind of helps. So there's an organization in Washington called the Washington Interscholastic Athletic Association. Mm-hmm. And that, yes. I'm just going to read off of there. This says, the rulemaking body to create equitable playing conditions for middle and junior and high school sports teams, both public and private in Washington. The WIA policy is what any of our athletes competing in middle or high school sports are subject to. And the GSSSL also joined this WIAA. It's mostly composed of high school athletic directors. Now, we talked about terminology before. One of the terminology I like to use is, I don't call them public schools, I call them government schools. So most of the people on this this WIA are athletic directors at government schools. There are a few from private schools. But if you join this, it gets you insurance that can protect the board from liability. And you have to follow these WIAA rules. Well, the trans activists first got on this WIAA organization, and they changed the rules there. And then the people at the Greater Seattle Summer Swimming League said, look, we have to adopt these rules because we have to be consistent with the WIAA.
Is that true?
So there's a sort of and that was an argument they made. There were some people who argued the other side that we don't have to be consistent with them, but it was an argument that was very compelling for a lot of the people there. Sure. But I guess what I'm trying to say is the activists for this whole trans cause have infiltrated organizations. They have a political agenda. And I think that it's Marxist. I think that the idea is that real competition, it tends to show the differences in people, right? I mean, there are some people who have a competitive advantage because of how they were born, and then they develop that through years and years of great training. And the competition differentiates people. It says there are differences. That's counter to Marxist ideology. The Marxists want everybody to be equal. Competition, real open, fair competition, is a threat to the Marxist agenda. So maybe this is a bit of a conspiracy theory, but you may have heard of social Marxism. These people have gotten into the tops of all these organizations, and they're not interested in running these organizations well. They're interested in promoting a left-wing agenda. And so this is really, the trans issue is not just about fairness in sports. This is about freedom.
Yeah, you're scratching at something here a little bit that, I wasn't talking about it in political terms. I was definitely, or had definitely been thinking about all of this as an attack on meritocracy, because I felt like athletics is one of the last great, like, just chances for us to celebrate the very best at something, right? Where it's a measurement of a clock. It's man versus man, woman versus woman. Like it's a competition that you're trying to see who can better the other person. It's a true merits-based system. And the goal, the reason we have categories in sport are to take out the obvious massive differences in performance that would be between an adult and say a child or a man and a woman, so that it can be skill and talent and drive and training and who's worked this hard, just really proving your merit. And so you're scratching at that. It's something I haven't actually like fully articulated in my head. At least it seems like that's what you're saying.
It's an attack on meritocracy itself. You put it very well. So I've heard some interesting arguments, you know, in talking to some trans identifying adults. I said, look, it's just not fair. And it's obvious that it's not fair. At our little swim and tennis clubs, there are pool records. And the pool records are put on a little tiny metal plaques that are screwed to a board near the pool for all the age class records. And you just look at that chart, and every single age class records for the boys is a faster time than the age class records for the girls, going down to age 9, way before puberty. There are a couple of exceptions. There's a relay team for the girls that did exceptionally well one year, but it's 95% of the boys' times are faster than the girls' times. And what that says, it's just obvious that there's an advantage that happens to having XY chromosomes that happens before puberty. And my expectation is they're going to take down that records chart because it shows the falsehood of their position.
Huh. Well, I mean, it frustrates me every time. Like when I go to the Harvard pool to watch my son compete, up on the record board, there's all the men's records. They're all held by males. And then the women's record board is so impressive because the national championships were held at that pool a long time ago. And it's like a list of the legends of, you know, in recent history in women's swimming. Mary T. Maher is up on that board and Tracy Calkins and just like some amazing swimmers. And now there's a male swimmer holds records on the women's board and male swimmers hold the records on all of the men's side. And it's just making a laughing stock of like, where do women get to excel? Where do they get to have a point of pride in what they've been able to accomplish? The men are going to erase all of it. I hadn't considered people taking down the record boards. I felt like it was painful enough to have to look at that. It's just like a stab in the heart of women all there. Oh, the men are allowed to have both sides. But I hadn't thought about taking them down as a whole. I wonder, did anyone suggest that at your meeting?
So some of the people on the trans gender side are smart, and they'll realize that. I'm just predicting that that's going to happen. So I was talking to some trans people, and they said, so I said, look, it's just not fair. And this person said, who was a biological woman identifying as a man, so you just don't want to let us win. Is that it? Us? And of course, I didn't think rapidly enough, but what I should have said is, I want you to win as long as it's fair. And this mm-hmm. is just not fair. Yeah. The other interesting thing, so you may encounter that, and I want you to be ready for that kind of thing. If it comes to you, I want you to give the snappy argument that I wasn't smart enough to figure out at the time. The other interesting argument I've had is, you know, recognizing that it's unfair, I proposed to my son, who's gay, that there ought to be three categories. Let's have the trans identifying people have their own category. You can even put them for a sport like swimming, you can even put them in the same heats as the biological women. It's not going to slow the biological women down any, but give them a separate little medal ceremony with separate medals. And he responded with, ah, separate but equal, eh?
That's exactly what the women's category is.
It is separate. Well, so, but let's examine that. I mean, obviously we're not going to advocate the phrase came up in the civil rights struggle of the 60s when there were segregated schools. Separate but equal was not appropriate under those conditions. And so that's the argument they're using against us. And I want you to be inoculated against that. So if separate but equal is a bad principle, then you can't have women's and men's categories at all.
Yeah.
And so now we can define a spectrum of on one end, one extreme end of the spectrum. There's only one age category. I'm sorry, only one gender, sex. There's only one category. And the men and women are all in it because you can't have separate but equal. Yeah. At the other extreme is having everybody be in their own category because everybody's born a little bit differently. Some people have genetic advantages. Some people are a little strong, worked a little harder perhaps. And now you've got everybody getting participation trophies. So mm-hmm. obviously, the two extremes are crazy. We have to have some place where we draw the line. Historically, we drew the line where we have separate categories for men and women, and that's worked out really well. Do we want to add a third category for trans people? I don't know. But if someone gives you the argument that I got, separate but equal, how fair is that? You must be a racist, right? Respond with, look, you know, we already have different categories. And if you're proposing doing away with categories, that's also absurd.
Yeah, that's exactly where we are prepared on that one. We've had some really good discussions and spent a lot of time, especially in the international consortium, discussing the third categories. Since that's come up, let's go there for a second. A third category, if you have a category, first of all, we don't have categories throughout any history that we create based upon identity. So sports is like the great unifier. We don't look at someone's race, religion, identity of any kind. We just look at we have categories based on age, weight, sex, and para categories. And those are just biological categories that make sense. They're the largest divides that we have for safety and fairness. Sex is the largest differentiator known to man for athletic performance. It's the largest one. So it's the most important one. But a third category, if we create a third category, we already don't have enough funding or enough opportunity for women. So a third category, why would we go there? But it's just another category for more male bodies to excel in. So men will win in 2 out of 3 categories. If you divide a trans category into males who identify as women and women who identify as men, then you have all kinds of other issues in there. Then you're saying identity categories matter and you have to make a non-binary category. And then you end up with still an imbalance of categories where men will win the majority of all of the opportunities. Also, within identity categories, when it comes to trans, you end up with different levels of, you know, how much has someone pharmaceutically hampered their performance or their development? At what point? How much have they done? Are they still, are women excessively doping on testosterone and or are men castrated? And were they puberty blocked for adolescent puberty, but just have the mini puberties from infancy and in the womb? There's so many different levels to make it. It's an impossibility because the categories wouldn't be formulated out of biological reality. They'd be formulated on identity. And so there's no way to do it. I mean, they'll figure that out on their own, but the rationale for it just doesn't hold up when you actually push it a little ways down the road. So that's kind of where we've come. If anyone has anything to add to that, please feel free. I know that in powerlifting, this also we have in weightlifting, they have categories already for doped athletes, clean and like they call them natural and enhanced, I think. And the women who are as enhanced as they can be on testosterone still don't come close to performing to the natural men. which is an interesting, it's kind of like the idea of the woman identifying as a man being able to compete, like played out in front of us with all the statistics we need.
Yeah, Kim, I think that any inclusion of a third category is codependency. So a gender dysphobic person has a serious mental illness. They're out of touch with reality. And anyone that caters to that is a codependent. And there should never be a third category. They shouldn't compete as a different gender than their biology. That's, like Bruce said, it's patently unfair. And Russell, I have something I want to say to you, buddy. You're not just a dad. You're a hero. Oh. I cannot imagine, or I've only imagined, what you're going through. And I dread the day. And unfortunately, I have to tell you, I think it's going to happen. Because my daughter is only getting faster. And she's only 15. And she's starting to get into these competitions, and it scares the you know what out of me. But gender dysphoric people are ill. I have taught fitness to male schizophrenics, and I'm familiar with people who are out of touch with reality, and they need help. We need compassion for them. But putting them into the opposite gender, pretending that gender, is not helping them. It's hurting them. It's feeding this hoax. It's a hoax. And I appreciate you men when you stand up and say, it's a hoax. This isn't real. It's like, you know, in political correctness, the boy that said the emperor is naked is the bad guy. He's the one that's called, you know, a phobe. But transphobia is political speech. It's not a clinical term. It's purely political speech. And Bruce was saying it's Marxist. Absolutely. Because the free market is a meritocracy. And that's what we celebrate in sport. At least I thought that's what we celebrate in sport. And that's why it's so special and unique and important for kids to learn about life through sports. I used to tell my coaches, I said, every season's a lifetime. It is a beginning, a middle, and an end. And you have to nurture it. And you have to let it grow. But this is, it's just so confusing to everyone. Mm-hmm. And Russell, your stories are terrifying, because I do see myself standing in front of that boy trying to raise my daughter and not touching him, but just keep, you know, playing good defense, you know, and then being arrested, which
That's what I don't want. And my daughter doesn't want that either. And I'll say one thing also about transphobia. There's another good conversation with my daughter. And it's funny, my daughter's 15 also, and she's in high school, and she's competed like at the Nike Nationals and stuff. And so, you know, she does compete at a pretty high level. And so we talked the whole word transphobe. And she's like, what does that mean, Dad? I guess in theory it means that you're afraid of trans people. And so that makes us a bad thing. And she goes, what if I am afraid of him? What if I am afraid of some guy trying to pretend to be a girl getting in my locker room?
But it's not irrational.
Like, yeah, I was like, wait a second. Yeah, it's, what would it be bad if she was? I mean, why would we say to girls, hey, it's not right of you to be afraid of boys pretending to be girls?
And, it's a rational fear that we instill in our children. We tell them to trust their gut. In all my training, and I received a lot of training because I've been a Boy Scout leader a long time. I'm not Catholic, but I've coached in Catholic ball leagues. You get the sexual abuse training, and this is sexualizing children. It is grooming, it is child sex abuse, and it should be prosecuted to the fullest extent. Anytime you bring something like, and apologies to Bruce and your son, but when you take that flag in front of children and you have to explain what it means to them, you are sexualizing them. And that is grooming. Child sex abuse.
I'm going to jump in real quick on something that you said. The compassion point of this, the reason ICONS exists is to defend women and girls, to make sure that women enjoy sport and enjoy locker rooms with privacy and dignity and have the ability to thrive and see women, elite women in sport, as something that they can aspire to. And I do think on both sides of this issue, when we talk about the boys, it's important to have compassion. It's important to realize there are victims here on all sides. This is the one place where I think we have to, I think it helps us to realize that the boys that are suffering and being lied to and told this is their right and their place to be, they're being set up. They're being set up for a life of, you know, of an unhealthy body, but they're also being set up and used by adults that want to perpetuate this. And the girls are the ones suffering by and large. You know, for each boy that comes in, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of girls affected. But we do have to realize, and this is why the adults like you all and all of the parents, we need to show up, step into the room and say, we're going to take this on our shoulders. We're going to fix it, because the kids are being hurt. There's no question. Now, in the adult categories, which is not the situation you three dads are in, the adult categories, these men need to be called out for what they're doing. But when it comes to children, the adults in the room need to make the policies. They need to hold the boys accountable. There is no way to be able to protect our daughters and still tell boys that they can demand whatever they want from the women, that they can have access to whatever they want from the women. It's the women's job to step aside. So anyway, that was just a thought that popped in when I heard you, Montgomery. I do think, you know, illness, compassion, like, it's all relevant. All these points are relevant, but like when there's a boy in a girl's race, the girls shouldn't have to be looking over their shoulder wondering, do I deserve fair sports? Are there any boys in my race? Like, I wonder if this is fair. And at the same time, the boys should not be out there, be put out there to be put in the media and discussed as if they're a political ploy or toy to be used. This is not okay for us to be doing to our children on either side.
Right. And I'll say one other thing real quick is the, cause you brought the kind issue. And that's the other thing that is very difficult as a dad. You're there and you're being so mean if you're speaking up and you're pointing out that that's a boy, and kind of Montgomery's point too. And another famous people are saying this too. It's really unkind to say to somebody, you're in the wrong body and we're going to mutilate your body and make you a pharmaceutical patient for life. I think that is a very unkind thing to do. And so speaking the truth might be difficult, but it is the kind thing to do. And it's important for our girls. And so if we don't do that, we're going to lose credibility with our girls. But it's not being unkind to speak the truth. It might be uncomfortable, but it's actually the kind thing to do to say, hey, you know, like you're saying, Kim, you can be any kind of boy you want to be. You know, there's no restraint on that. But you just can't come into the girls' space and claim that as your own just because you want to right now. And so I think that's for anyone out there who's worried about appearing rude or unkind, really thinking about the bigger picture here, that telling that boy he's in the wrong body and all the other girls, hey, just take it, is really the most unkind thing to do.
I also think it's important to realize that I think historically women's sport has been way more accepting than men's sport of gender non-conforming individuals. Like, it's been a place for women to thrive who haven't fit into stereotypical norms. So accusing women in sport of not being welcoming because they don't want to welcome men and boys into their locker rooms or into their competitions is really disingenuous. I don't feel like that's a fair, it's not just not fair, it's a really harmful accusation to hurl at women.
Right. Well, and one last thing I'll say, Kim, an experience that happened the last 2 years. So the girls on my daughter's team were used to running with boys and, you know, having two different boys in one season. There was a girl on another team that had a boy name and looked a lot like a boy. And the other girls were like, I think that's a boy. I think that's a boy. And She's a girl. She's a real girl. You can always tell the real girls because they actually wear spandex shorts. The boys don't wear spandex shorts. But for a while before she was wearing spandex shorts, the other girls were looking at her very suspiciously and talking about her. And that's a really unpleasant thing to that poor girl to have to go through that. Hey, she might be a boy. I mean, when you blur the line for everybody like this, there's a lot of collateral damage that no one talks about or cares about that's really harmful. And no one wants to talk about that. It just seems like the trans whatever is preeminent in all discussions and only voice that matters and the only opinion that matters and the only feelings that matter. And that's just not right. And so there's a lot of secondary and tertiary effects that are really, really bad to this that no one talks about too. So standing up for it is really important, and you're helping a lot of kids that you never realize will be helped.
Okay, we're gonna run over just because this is an awesome discussion. And I wanna thank Bruce, amazing that you were willing to stand up where you were, just instinctually incredible. Russell, you're being just such a powerful force. And Montgomery, you know, just thank you for coming and speaking out. And thinking ahead. So I want to wrap up on ideas that each of you have, any inspiration for this Father's Day special that you can give to other men considering what to do or thinking about, you know, what can I know my daughter's going to compete against a boy, or I know my club or my team is, you know, trying to, who should I talk to? What can I do? How can I make an impact? Any inspiration? Bruce, let's start with you and we'll work our way down.
Well, I was not successful at preventing this thing, but I think that the most effective thing that I said was, it's just not fair. It's just not fair. And if I can stand up in the belly of woke left-wing Seattle and risk being called a homophobe Nazi, notice, I'm still alive. It didn't kill me. You can do it too. And just, Russell said it before when we were talking before the session started, it's really important for dads and moms and all people to stand up and say, wait a minute, the emperor's not wearing any clothes here. This is just not fair.
Yeah.
And so do it. Stand up. Make yourself the target. They're not going to kill you.
Thank you, Bruce. Russell?
Yeah, that's a message I've learned over the last 2 years is talk, talk, talk. What they want you to do is not talk. They want you to be silent, and they don't want you to take pictures, especially too. So one tweet, I did a tweet on this. I took a picture of my daughter's cross country race, and there's a boy on the podium and he looks like a boy and he's up there. And as I said, this is a really awkward cross country race. And it got retweeted by Riley Gaines and Megyn Kelly and seen by millions of people. And that did more than anything else. And so a school administrator met with me, threatened to kick my daughter out of her school and said, you're not allowed to take pictures and share them anymore. And for my friend Bruce, who's a First Amendment righteousness guy, that didn't rub me the right way either. And I was like, you can't do that. But that's what they want. They don't want people to know about it. They don't want people to speak up about it. So that's what you have to do. And that's what you have to do to keep credibility with your kids. And so the main pressure points are the administrators and the coaches. Because you got to call out your coaches. Like I've had a lot of unpleasant meetings and say, hey, you're not protecting my daughter. That's your job. Your job is to ensure fairness in the sport. You know, if a girl showed up who was in college claiming she's in high school, you would protest. Why aren't you protesting that there's a boy in here? Why aren't you standing up for our daughters? And so, you know, be loud, be obnoxious, you know, don't be afraid because it's uncomfortable. It's unpleasant, but your daughter will appreciate it. The other daughters are going to appreciate it and you're going to affect change. And so, just speak up, don't stop, and don't let them make you be quiet.
Thank you so much, Russell. Montgomery, can we hear some parting thoughts from you on this, please?
Sure. I think one of the things I'm surprised about is there haven't been more litigation because as a former athletic director and coach, I know we have a duty to properly match. So you see this in middle school where you might have a 200-plus pound eighth grader and you can't match them up against the 135-pound person. You have to properly match them. So any fathers or people who have a daughter who's been harmed in a transgender incident, I would think they would have a great standing for a court case to help get this done. And the last thing I want to say is I'm afraid. I'm afraid of what I might do or say. I'm afraid of what might happen when my daughter, or if my daughter, is confronted by this. So I think since we're going to the Nationals, is it something I want to bring up? Not really, because I don't want to mess with her head if it doesn't happen. But I also want her to be prepared mentally and emotionally if it does happen. But how do you do that?
Well, yeah, I'm gonna keep, I think that's, these are, I want to, we'll have another webinar on this, because I want to share, think of through that and talk to you guys offline. But I think we should have an entire webinar on how could I approach a situation where my daughter or my athletes run into this, and what are my options? Because laying out those choices, I think, will help us to game plan and help people to have a game plan of what they can do. So okay. I know Russell's already faced it, but I think it just is a little more head scratching, especially depending upon where you are in the country and what the reception is. Like, just being prepared ahead of time is good. This was an incredible discussion. Happy Father's Day to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to close the webinar down, but I'm going to ask our three guests to stay on just so I can chat with them a little bit longer as we wrap up. So thanks, everyone.
Thank you.